Hello and welcome to The Sports Doctor. I'm Chris Fox, joined by Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist on Trade Street in Aurora. He's the columnist of The Sports Doctor column in Trib Local, triblocal.com, the Aurora Beacon, and the Naperville Sun. Hello, Dr. Weil.
Hey, Chris, good to see you. Hello, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for listening to The Sports Doctor, show number, who knows how many hundreds, right, Chris?
We're not keeping count.
We're not keeping count. We didn't even try to keep count to see when our guest was on last, but we're excited. We have Jeanette Andrews. Jeanette Andrews is a musician, a magician for forever. was on a few years ago and has a new exciting show that she's going to talk about. Jeanette, welcome to The Sports Doctor. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Yes. You know, your dad, of course, has been a frequent guest on The Sports Doctor way back when. To one of the finest personal trainers and off-ice exercise trainers over the years. And Jeanette, for those who don't know anything about you, talk a little bit, if you would, about your background and how long you've been involved in magic and what got you to where you are now.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks. I started doing magic when I was 4 years old, and I got interested in magic by seeing a Siegfried and Roy TV special. And I just saw it and was completely enthralled and knew that that's what I really wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I did my first magic show for my preschool class and started doing magic professionally actually when I was 6 years old. And this is all I have ever done since. So it's really, really my passion.
Yes, and you have been doing individual shows. You do parties. You do lots of,
right.
of different things. Now, of course, Siegfried and Roy were one of the biggest acts in the world,
yes.
weren't they, for many years
yes.
in Las Vegas before that accident
mm-hmm.
that happened. I mean, they were a huge show. You actually had an opportunity to correspond numerous times and to meet them, didn't you?
Yes, that is
as
true.
You were growing up?
Yes.
Said, keep an eye on this kid.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Because of getting interested in magic because of them, when I was four, I had really two goals in life. One was to become a magician, and the other was to meet Siegfried and Roy. And so when I was four, with the help of my parents, I wrote a letter to Siegfried and Roy telling them that they had inspired me to become a magician and, you know, how much that had meant to me and, you know, that I'd done this little show for my preschool class. And miraculously, Roy actually wrote me a letter back.
Because that's wonderful when you hear that, because so many times it seems, right, Chris?
I'm sure they get tons of mail.
Tons
they don't
of
respond
mail,
to everybody.
No one ever hears back. And you say to yourself, boy, what does it take to contact somebody? They must have been very excited because of your age.
Right, I think so.
And the fact that, you know, mom and dad probably made it grammatically correct when it came to the letter itself. So
well,
they got back to you.
They got back to me, and they said, next time you're in Las Vegas, you can be a guest at our show, and you and your parents can come and meet with us, which was astounding. And over the course of my life, I've been able to meet with them a number of times. I actually just went out to Las Vegas to meet with them a couple of months ago, and I have been, you know, correspond with them on a regular basis. So it's been fantastic, and they've been so generous to me over the course of my life
you
and
know,
my career.
Sometimes, Chris, on The Sports Doctor, we talk to parents all the time. Athletes hear sometimes a story, you know, I watched that figure skating competition. This is what I wanted to do. They ended up doing it, you know, forever for the rest of their life. That type of passion, interest, it's sure not common when you hear these kinds of stories. Yet here you are in your early 20s,
mm-hmm.
Still doing what you love to do and remembering when you first were exposed to that. Did some of your friends say, holy cow, you're so dedicated, so, like, already? You know what your super interest is.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people and a lot of friends and people around me, I think as a young child, parents of friends of mine, you know, kind of maybe thought it was a phase or, you know, something that would pass, but I knew that it certainly wasn't. It never even entered my mind that I would ever do anything else. And, you know, it was just something that was my 24-hour-a-day thought and love and passion and just kept going with it.
You think of all the people who would rather do just about anything than be on a stage in front of people. Were you even at 4 or 6 years old comfortable being in front of an audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely was. And every once in a while, depending on circumstances, you know, I will get nervous. I'm very comfortable being in front of people and being in front of a group on a stage. That's not something inherently that makes me nervous at all. But the times when I will get nervous is if I have like a new piece in my show, I'm, you know, doing maybe a premiere of a new show, or just am working in new material, or if there's, you know, somebody in the audience that is, you know, kind of a bigger name magician, or maybe somebody that is, you know, kind of prominent in whatever it is that their field is, that I just, you know, I'm like, wow, I can't believe this person's in the audience, then that'll make me pretty nervous sometimes.
But things like with small groups, I remember with Denise Provenzano, they helped sponsor that fantastic Blessings in a Backpack event,
right?
With some others in Oak Brook, and you are moving around, stopping at some tables, working with small groups, working with one or two people. So whether it's that's got to be something that's very, very challenging. Also, you know, whether you can be, you know, in front of a large audience, I guess, or moving back and forth with adults or children. Do you do anything with kids?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, sometimes I will work with different, you know, kids groups doing, you know, programs for like before and after school groups, or, you know, library, you know, summer incentive reading programs or something like that. So, you know, sometimes I will do stuff like that if people
you know, I really wanted to ask you too, Jeanette, the mental and physical training for magic. You know, sometimes you watch, whether it's Chris Angel or David Blaine or David Copperfield, Siegfried and Roy. I mean, these guys are so athletic, so
absolutely
physical. I mean, you try carrying tigers around on your back, right? So the, let alone that super dexterity things that you do, talk a little bit about, you know, some of the challenges on the mental and physical side when you're working your magic.
Yeah, well, that's a great question and a great topic. And I think for me, that is kind of threefold. And as far as mental challenges go, I'm very dedicated and invested into the creative aspect of my magic. I'm very interested in magic as an artistic medium. And I'm interested in using magic as a tool to convey other kind of creative expressive ideas in the way that, you know, a painter might use kind of the artistic medium of paint and canvas and the technique of painting to
sculptor.
Right, or sculptors, or any type of different artistic medium as a means of
expression.
Right, I'm interested in using the art of magic as a tool for conveying ideas. So for me, I'm very, as kind of it relates to the mental side of things, I'm really dedicated to the creative aspect of what I do, and that is a huge part of my mental kind of time consumption, is really focusing on that, always striving to create and do something new and innovative, and spending a lot of time really focusing on that and always kind of looking for what's next, what can I be doing next, what's new, what can I be doing and working on now.
Now, your newest show, what's it called?
It's called Lumia.
Lumia.
And it is a perceptual exploration of kind of the illusion of light.
Aha. So really, that sounds fascinating. To say the least, the focus and concentration has to be extreme, whether you're learning these things, like a ballerina or the artist learning whatever their new technique or program is, to the physical side, the actual side of performing. You talked before we went on the air, the importance of posture and all of these things that you were. And I said, talk to your dad.
Right. And, and I was just going to get to that, you know, recently over doing, you know, immense amounts of practice, because depending on, you know, kind of how the week works out, or how, you know, if I have a big show coming up with a new piece in it, or things like that, you know, there are many days where I'm practicing hours and hours and hours a day. And, you know, some days that might be 6-8
Holy
hours
cow,
a day.
Chris disappeared.
And
he's levitating. Oh, it's an illusion.
Here I'm back.
Okay, there he goes.
But, you know, depending on, you know, if I have to do, you know, videotapes submission for something, you know, I might be very well, maybe practicing, you know, eight plus hours a day for that, doing, you know, very fine motor skill movements, you know, with my hands, as well as I'm also very interested in movement as it relates to kind of greater stage movement and using the body in relation to space to kind of create gesture.
Almost
in an interesting
dance-like.
Way. In a vague way, yes. And so recently, about 2 months ago, I did start experiencing some pretty bad pain in some of the fingers of my right hand. And so now it's trying to, you know, it's been a big series of consulting with several different doctors to kind of rule out
the old famous overuse.
Things. Exactly.
Varies what you're overusing.
Right.
You can imagine the amount of activity, the dexterity and things like that with that type of control
right.
with your hands. You've always been in great shape. Have you always paid attention to the physical side of training, whether you were running or lifting weights or doing machines? What do you do to try to stay on top of performing?
Well, I think that just trying to I do try to eat really well. I'm a vegetarian. I really pay attention to what I put in my body.
You would have enjoyed our last week's show, right, Chris? Katie Davis,
the nutritionist.
Sports nutritionist.
Yeah.
Talking about high performance and fueling your body. How long have you been a vegetarian?
I've been completely vegetarian for about the last 3 years. It was kind of a gradual process. I didn't eat a lot of meat to start with. Like, even just as a child, I wasn't eating meat every day, probably. And I never ate a lot of red meat, so that wasn't hard for me to get rid of that.
But the side of nutrition, the importance, and you're listening here to The Sports Doctor, 90.9 FM, WDCB. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist. I'm here with Chris Fox, the sports editor of The Lombardian. We want to thank everybody, of course, for listening. You want to hear past shows. This is a great one. There's a lot of other great examples. Go to sportsdoctorradio.com and pick one and listen to some previous guests. You might find Jeanette back 2-3 years ago. We are speaking with Jeanette Andrews, young, very, very talented magician, who virtually has done this forever since she's 4 years old. So lots of attention into the physical mental side of getting ready for this or trying to keep this up. So you're like 7 days a week.
Yeah, this is pretty much seven right? days a week, 24 hours a day. I mean, I eat, sleep, and breathe this constantly.
How long is the show, Lumia?
The show runs, the actual running time of the show itself is about 48 minutes, but there is a brief intermission in between that's about 15 minutes or so. So the entire experience is right about an hour, 5 hour, 10.
And how much time did you spend putting together a new show? Is this something where you say to yourself, I need to be working on this for the next 3 months, for the next 6 months? What type of time frame goes into developing a whole new show that you're doing?
Well, this show is kind of a culmination of different pieces that I have been working on for a long time. There are pieces in the show. There are a couple pieces in the show. I think two, actually, that I have been doing since I was 8 years old, but have been honed and perfected, and one in particular that has gone through so many iterations of change over the years that, of course, is unrecognizable from when I was eight and started working on it, that, you know, is totally different and new now. Two pieces that are brand new for this show. I think there are two or three pieces that are brand new for this show. So for this, it was really the process of putting together the common thread to weave together the show, putting together new actual performance themes and presentations and ideas behind the pieces themselves, behind many of them, as well as several new pieces. So I spent in total about 6 months working on the couple new pieces and the performance aspects and kind of the weaving together and the styling and putting together music and videos and things like that that are involved with the show.
How do you learn more about magic? Are there schools? Mm-hmm. Do you pick up by reading or looking at other magicians? I've always heard there's this code of, you know, don't share your secrets.
Well, that's certainly true. And there, for me, it's been obviously a really long process, but
you're a PhD in magic, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent so much time being into this and have really taken my education and what I do, I take it very seriously, and have spent so much time being interested in what I do that I really try to seek out the best in educating myself.
You went to school here, didn't you?
Yeah, I have.
At College of DuPage.
Yes, I have taken a number of classes here, and everything that I took here was very much geared towards being relevant to what I do, as far as taking, you know, marketing classes or a lot of design classes, as far as, you know, advertising design and things like that. And I've also taken a lot of philosophy classes, which does definitely play an influential role.
That's
in
interesting.
My show.
Really, the philosophy, side of things. When you think about the that whole atmosphere, mm-hmm. How long has the magician and magic, how far does it go back? Is it like forever?
Yeah, pretty much.
Flipping rocks, right?
They do have, old carvings from, you know, the inside of pyramids that they debatably think might be magicians, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, there are certainly very, very old, you know, engravings that go back that very clearly depict magicians. So it is, you know, it's been an art form that's been around for a very long time.
Seems as popular today as ever in so many ways.
There's definitely been a resurgence of it. And interestingly enough, on Saturday, there's an opening at the Chicago History Museum about the history of magic in Chicago, which is really interesting. I'll be doing a performance there on Saturday for the exhibition opening, as well as on Sunday.
What date is that? Is that this week?
That is Saturday, June 9th.
Okay.
And doing performances there, actually doing strolling magic in the galleries at the museum.
So is that
for
the name
of
it,
the
strolling magic? What you might have done at Blessings in a Backpack.
Exactly.
You would be stopping at this table and
stopping
at that table.
Yeah, very like personalized close-up magic performances for small groups at like a cocktail party or that, which was, you know, a fundraiser, which was fantastic, and doing very just really kind of great, quaint, personalized performances.
Now, there
for
was
people.
A show, Chris. You know, you just mentioned before, you know, The Code. There was some sort of a show, I don't know if it was Fox or whatever, there was the show of This Is How It's Done.
Right.
Were they exposed? What'd you think of that? Was that like, oh my gosh, this is sacrilegious?
Yeah, for sure. No,
guy was in a mask, right? No one knew who he was.
Well, people did know who he was. but no, people knew when they found out, and nobody was very happy.
I would think.
Myself included. There is a lot of psychology that happens in magic. There's a lot of philosophy that happens in magic. For myself, having spent immense amounts of time very carefully crafting a very specific, you know, psychological framework in which everything that I do is viewed, and really honing, you know, my craft and my technique. It is very frustrating for people who make a living, such as myself, doing this when, you know, somebody goes on TV and essentially is revealing trade secrets. For example,
yeah, 'cause they're right, that never, ever, ever happened.
Right. And it's frustrating in the same way that, you know, and there were lawsuits that were, you know, tried to be brought up about that. But it's like if, you know, somebody went on TV and said, this is the recipe for Coca-Cola. Here you go. That would get a huge uproar, because the fact is, this is how people, are putting food on their tables, and
absolutely,
it is frustrating. And of course, a lot of magic is the presentation for it, and I spend immense of time working on that.
Shows add tremendously to the type of illusion. I mean, again, if you're seeing someone who's levitating, mm-hmm, in front of kids in the street, and it seems like David Blaine, and there's kids in the street, and he's got 12 cameras on him, and he's lifted off the ground,
sure.
And you say there's no cranes or wires and these kinds of things around. Is the producing of TV shows complicit in some of these different illusions that seem next to impossible, or are you seeing what they're doing?
Well, I think magic is always going to seem better in real life. I think that's just always the case because it's going to be live. It's going to be in front of you. You know that there, you know, whether or not, you know, there is any means of any editing or anything involved, which, you know, I don't think there is. But if you see something live, you know that's not happening. You are there to experience it yourself. You're there to experience it in the way that it's intended to be. And you're there in that moment. You see it unfold
were
before
you
your eyes.
Or
that's
are
a totally
you a fan
different
of Houdini?
Experience. I think Houdini's an interesting person.
Maybe the most famous, would you say?
I think he's probably, as far as people, if they say, you know, famous magician, I think that's the person they think of the most. You know, I think he definitely has a lot of notoriety as far as
now he was
having,
a promoter, wasn't he?
Yes, that's exactly what I was just about to say. I think he certainly was insanely successful as far as being kind of the ultimate promoter of himself and showman, as far as being able to get people into what he was about and what he was doing, for sure.
I'm thinking when a lot of us watch magic on TV or in person, the first thing we'll think is, how did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
When you were watching growing up, mm-hmm. would you say, how did they do that? Or would you say, I wonder, you know, if I could do that?
Well, I think it changes the older you get and the older, the more you've been in the industry and the more you know. Because as a really young child, like when I first got into it, it was very much that, like, oh my gosh, you know, kind of reaction.
Yes, it was magic. And
exactly. Really? You know, and that, oh my gosh, how did they do that? And at the same time, that kind of, I want to be like that. I wanted to very much emulate the people that I was seeing on the TV at the time, like the Siegfried and Roy's. And there was this fantastic TV special on kind of at the same time. It was actually an ongoing thing called The World's Greatest Magic, where they would bring in, it was like 15 different people from all over the world that would come on. They'd do like a 5-minute act. And they had a lot of great magicians on that show. And so I would see, you know, one person on that show. They had a really great German magician on that show, on one of the episodes of that show, named Topaz, who miraculously a couple years ago I got to end up meeting and working with, which was like a dream come true. But you know, when I was like 5 or 4, seeing him and seeing what he could do, I was like, that's amazing. I want to do that. I want to be that.
I remember,
you know?
You must have been 7, 8, 9 years old. I went to see one of your shows, and you had a young boy who was performing with you.
That's right.
Is he still floating around? Did some of these kids grow up like you are still performing?
He is actually a theatrical lighting designer now.
Okay.
So that happens with a lot of people.
Entertainment industry.
Yeah, a lot of kids get into magic, you know, around that age. You know, I was definitely pretty young, a lot younger than most, but especially, you know, it's pretty typical for kids to get into magic around like 7, 8, kind of that age range. Get into it. They'll be really into it maybe until they're kind of like 12 or 13, and then may kind of drift out of it. Sometimes they will become really involved in other facets of it or other kind of related crafts or fields, like theater, or like, you know, like he did, like lighting, or just other things that somehow they kind of learned about through being involved in magic.
Really?
And
do you
and
remember
stuck.
Your first trick?
I
what
do.
Do you remember your first trick? What was it? Don't tell us how you did it.
No, I won't. I couldn't do that.
Don't
but
do that.
No, I do actually. My parents got me a magic set for Christmas when I was 4. So my first official trick was a trick from the magic set, and it's called a ball and vase, and it's like a little ball that you put in the stand, and you kind of put a cover over it, and then the ball disappears after you take the cover
off.
Even
the four-year-old gift, I can't figure out how they did it.
And well, it's really clever. It's a great little trick, and so that was my first official magic trick, but before that, I would kind of run around the house doing, like, pretend magic tricks as a four-year-old, you know, making my stuffed animals disappear, being like, now you see it, now you don't, kind of stuff like that. So,
how did you get to be professional at age six?
That's a great question too. I had started doing these shows for my, you know, like school classmates, like for my kindergarten class and friends' birthday parties and stuff, when I was 4 and 5, and ended up getting hired, I think it was for $10, to do a show for a local park district's day camp. And so I think I was, as a six-year-old, entertaining like the five-year-old. And I think
tough
I did
audience.
Yeah, I think I did like a 15-minute magic show or 20-minute magic show or something.
But you got
like
paid.
But I got paid.
Really?
And then I reinvested it in other, you know, a new magic book or something.
Do you have a favorite type illusion and or magic piece in all these years?
Yeah. My favorite, as far as what I like to perform, is certainly the pieces of magic that I do that are very performance and performance art related. I have a lot of magic that I do that's choreographed to music. I love working with music. I think it's really interesting, and I think there's a lot of fantastic, very creative music in the world, and it's very inspiring for me to work with that. And I love doing a lot of, as we were mentioning before, kind of this super dexterous type of magic that's very sleight of hand oriented and very very visual and things that are very creative.
With strings and
I do have a piece. Yes. I do have a piece in my show that's done with ribbons.
Yes,
yes. And I do enjoy that piece very much.
Are there a lot of female magicians out there? Are you
no.
in the minority?
I am in the minority so much.
Really?
Is insane. Yes. There was a. This is no longer current, and there aren't any really current statistics. And thankfully, this is changing. But it was between 5 and 10 years ago. There was a statistic taken by, I believe it was. It was either the Society of American Magicians or the International Brotherhood of Magicians, the two big organizations of magicians in America. And it was that less than 1% of the magicians are women. So that is shifting a little bit now. We are seeing a little bit more women in magic, but it's so much of the minority. I mean, that number might be up.
I guess
ever
when you
think
about
it, it's not even 10%.
When you think about it, you know, Chris, you're right. When you think about it, I can't remember a female magician on the, you know, on TV
right.
or in a show or something right. like that almost ever. So you're a trailblazer. You're an example. You're a role model.
I would love that.
So many, you know, young women, you know, to say the least. That we can see how challenging something like this is. I can't believe Chris is almost out of time. Like you said, this was going to fly by, you know, the mental and physical challenges, the artistry of this. And you have to be a storyteller too, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think there, you know, again, I'm really interested in using magic to convey other ideas. And now it's about, you know, trying to keep yourself, you know, in well enough condition to do it.
Your new show is in Elmhurst.
It is.
And it's called?
It's called Lumia.
Okay.
And it is this illusionary exploration of the perception
of
light.
When is your show? Is it a couple times a week?
It is the first and third Monday of every month. And so the next performance is on June 18th. Monday, June 18th at 7:30 p.m. is at Flight 112, which is 112 West
Will
Park Avenue.
Will this be ongoing all through the summer? As you see it going?
Right now we have dates scheduled through the middle of July, through July 16th. But people are more than welcome to log online to check it out to www.JeanetteAndrews. That's JeanetteAndrews. Andrews, ANDREWS.com to find out more information about tickets and coming to the show.
And again, where's the location in Elmhurst?
The location is at it's at Flight 112, and that's at 112 West Park Avenue in Elmhurst, Illinois. It's right across the street from the train tracks.
They can find ticket information, phone number information of the venue through your website that you just
Yes.
gave. Okay.
JeanetteAndrews.com.
That's it.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been fantastic.
It was great. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
SportsDoctorRadio.com. All the shows from the last 3 years are there. SportsDoctorRadio.com. Send Dr. Weil an email at drrweil, that's drrweil, sportsdoctor@yahoo.com. And for the Kids Beating Obesity podcast, go to wdcb.org. Click on New Media, and that will get you to Kids Beating Obesity. Dr. Bob Weil, see you next week.
Rock and roll.
I'm Chris Fox. Thanks for listening. Please tune in next week to another edition of The Sports Doctor.